Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. Cannot believe all the topics we have live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd on all our platforms. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Channel 83, and right here in living color, FS1. Now, on the radio side, you will hear Joy Taylor. I can see her right there. You will not see, you will hear Joy Taylor. Because obviously with the virus, we're in a different situation. We are stringing this puppy together. It's unique, but I'm driving to work every day. We're the Spartan crew. They're kicking butt, taking names. And Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Colin?
I'm hanging in there. Danny Cannell, Howie Long, Joel Klatt, Matt Mosley, funny guy from Dallas. Stops by today. So here we go. We got a great show, a ton of topics. So I'm going to go about 10 minutes here. I got a couple of things on my mind. Number one, Travis Frederick is an all-world NFL player. He retired at 29 years old. Now, I think that's great for football, that he had a great career, doesn't have to sign a third contract, leaves. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, made a bunch of money. I'll get into that later. What does it mean for Dak? First of all, this guy's great. He's the best center in football. The last 2 years, the Cowboys' rankings with Travis Frederick, yards per play, number one. When he's gone, 22nd. Sacks, second fewest allowed in the NFL. When he's gone, second most allowed. He is a rock star. And Dallas's O-line, we've said this for the last year, it's not a revelation, it's getting old. Tyron Smith entered the league at 20. He's an old 29. Zach Martin is excellent. He's an older 29. It's starting to deteriorate. This is the first sign for a great guy who retired at the perfect time. This is what I've been saying about Dak Prescott. Teams in leagues with salary caps get bad fast when they sign good players, Dak Prescott, to great contracts. Joe Flacco, Ravens, great organization, great roster, signed a good player, Joe Flacco, to a great contract. They weren't the same for 3 years. Brandon Cooks with the Rams, they'd get rid of him tomorrow. Good player, great contract for his skill set. You can't do it in salary cap leagues. You can get away with it if you're the Yankees. Maybe the Dodgers, maybe the Red Sox. Can't get away with it in hockey, basketball, and the NFL. Okay, we have never, this is a prime example. That's why Russell Wilson gets the money. Because I've seen Russell Wilson carry bad O-lines from mostly year one in the NFL. I've seen him carry average receivers. I saw him last year carry the Seahawks when the running backs all got hurt. That's why when there was a question about Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll and John Snyder signed him in an hour. I've never seen Dak Prescott. Anytime an O-lineman gets hurt, anytime Zeke is suspended, pre-Amari Cooper, I've never seen him carry the team. Last year, Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs in the playoffs in rushing the last two games. Forget his passing. He led them in rushing. I have seen Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers carry bad defenses. Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. Deshaun Watson with a lousy running game and a terrible offensive line. Carson Wentz last year, deck chairs and lawn furniture, got Philadelphia to the playoffs. You cannot pay good players great money. More than ever, I want to franchise Dak. I want to see him now without the best center. He's still got a great receiver. He's still got a great running back. He's still got the game's first, second, or third best left tackle. It's still a top 10 offensive line, though it's not as good now. But you can't do this. You cannot do it. And I like Dak. I've said this before. I like him. But there's a reason. Every time somebody gets hurt or suspended, Dak's numbers go down. He does not have the ability to take average parts and elevate them. That defines Russell Wilson. That defines him. That's who Russell Wilson is. He's never had a great O-line. He's never had a top five O-line. I mean, last year they brought, was it last year they brought Marshawn Lynch out of retirement? I mean, come on. So it's when people say, well, you don't like Dak. No, I do like him. But to pay him $36 million, I got to love him. And he has never shown an ability to carry. And this is why Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, I'm going to pay him whatevs. I'm going to pay, give me the check, let me sign him, and I'll pay him early. With Dak, now I'm more inclined than ever to wait. Let's see what he can do, because he still has Zeke, still has Tyron Smith, still has Zach Martin, still has Amari Cooper. He's got a Super Bowl-winning head coach. Let me see what you can do when you don't have everything perfectly aligned. My guess is not as good. I want to shift to this. So I have opinions, and I don't expect everybody to agree with them. In fact, it's probably more fun if you don't always agree with them. I don't think I'm a contrarian. I tend to see things through a business perspective, although I am, you know, I'm pro-mobility. I'm pro-mobility for players, not because I love all the players, because I think from a business standpoint, all Americans have the right to be mobile. So I'm going to support a Kevin Durant. I'm going to support a LeBron James. I'm going to support great players, baseball players, Mookie Betts going Boston to Los Angeles. I support all players all the time having mobility because it's good business. I don't even have to like the guy. It's good business. But sometimes I have an opinion that I think is obvious, and I don't get the pushback. It's like, are you people crazy? Let me ask you right now today. Tom Brady's no longer a Patriot. I'm going to give you two options. Bill Belichick has a plan, or Bill Belichick's an idiot. I'm going to go with the former. He's got a plan. So yesterday, they release kicker Steven Goskowski. He's arguably the second or third best kicker in NFL history. He's got years left to kick. Why would they do that? They also will not pursue Teddy Bridgewater, who I love, and Andy Dalton, who I don't, but both are far better than their current quarterbacks. They also let their two best linebackers, two most productive linebackers, go. It's interesting. It's almost as if they have a plan. It's not, you're not going to tank. It's not tanking. Did Miami, we called it tanking, right? But in the end, you can build a culture without going 17-16-0. Miami built a great culture last year and started terribly. You think New England's culture is going to erode because they lose a bunch of games 27-23 now because they have the worst weapons in the league in Jarrett Stidham and don't even have their kicker? Belichick, folks, is not winging it. He's got a plan. He's manipulated officials. He's manipulated game plans. He's manipulated opposing coaches. He manipulates everybody in the league. You think he's just winging it? This dude's got a plan for lunch. You think he's winging it? Think about this. Who has the most picks in this year's NFL draft? Miami! Oh, that's right. Brian Flores used to be a Patriot. Who has the second most picks in this draft? Oh, Bill Belichick. He's a Patriot. You think they just stumbled into those? Oh my gosh, we got 13 draft picks. Where did they come from? Both have a plan. I said this last year. Joy is my witness. We both said this. Even when what were the Dolphins at one point? They were 0-0 September. And everybody was banging on them. And Joy and I went out and said, I love what they're doing. They're playing their butt off. They got rid of a lot of good players. But you remember we said, there's being bad, and there's being bad with a plan. Miami was bad with a plan, and by the end of the year, they won 5 of their last 9 games. Think about this. Belichick has 12 draft picks for this draft. Next year, they're going to get a compensatory pick for Brady, Jamie Collins, and Van Noy. They're going to move these picks to next year's draft, several of them, because they have automatically 7. The compensatories give them minimum 10, maybe 11 eventually. They'll move 2 or 3 picks then from this draft where they have 12 to next year's. And they will have 13 picks, 14 picks in next year's draft. And two great quarterbacks coming out. Cincinnati's going to be bad. Let's say they end up with a number one pick. They're not going to take one Joe Burrow. Bill Belichick calls and says, you want nine picks? You think Cincinnati's going to turn that down? In a division with Big Ben, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield and those rosters, Cincinnati gets their quarterback this year. They're going to turn that down. Belichick's got a plan. The plan is moving picks he has this year to next year, going into next year's draft with his normal picks, his multiple compensatories, a handful pushed to next year, having 12 to 13 or 14 picks, willing to give up nine if they go 6-10, lose a lot of close games, maintain the integrity of their culture in a draft with the two best college prospects since Andrew Luck. They don't have to be the worst team in the league. If Cincinnati's the worst, they're not going to take nine picks from New England. If the Giants are the worst, and they'll be bad, they're not going to take nine picks. They don't need to get Trevor Lawrence. They could get Justin Fields. They just need one of the two. This is amazing to me. This is not difficult. They don't need all their picks this year. They're going to get compensatories for Brady and Collins and Van Noy. They're going to move a handful of picks this year to next. And they're going to have eight, nine picks they're willing to give to every team above them in the draft that already has a quarterback. Arizona could be bad. They're not going to draft another quarterback. Cincinnati, Giants could be bad. They're not going to draft another quarterback. You don't think the Giants or the Bengals or Arizona wouldn't take eight picks from New England if the Patriots finish 6-10 and call and say, we want a quarterback. Kyler Murray needs help. Daniel Jones needs help. Joe Burrow's going to need help. Many of the bad teams next year, except Jacksonville, they'll probably draft a quarterback. Many of the bad teams have a quarterback. The saturation point in the NFL at quarterbacks, there's just not many teams that need them, and three to four of them are going to get one this year. I still contend the idea that Belichick doesn't have any plan for next year. It's just, he's just the kicker. They release him. They don't go after any quarterbacks. They let their top two linebacker playmakers go. And you think they're just making it up. This idea, you got to get over tanking. You got to get over, it's not like Belichick goes out and designs a bad game plan. Belichick goes into a game knowing we're limited this year. I'm going to position ourselves next year. We're going to fight like mad. But if we're 7-9 and 6-10, 13 to 14 draft picks, not everybody above us needs a quarterback. In fact, ask yourself right now, after this draft, the Chargers will get theirs. We know that. The Bengals will get theirs, and Miami's getting theirs. Look around the league, outside of Jacksonville and New England. Who's desperate for a quarterback? There isn't one. I mean, again, Chicago's tied up in Foles' contract, so they can't bail on that in a year. This is not a difficult one, right? You think either Belichick's dumb or has a plan. Which one do you think sounds right? They're not winging it here. Oh, it's so exciting. God, I'll get it. Maintain my love for New England. Yeah, just a little year hiccup. Market goes down briefly, pops back up in New England. It's all very good.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We have another story today, which I think I tend to be an optimist. You know, I go online. Twitter is such a vile, snarky place where if you just add context to this virus, you get shouted down from the mob. I tend to be somebody that looks at death rates and data points, and I think, okay, we're getting close. Stay inside another 10, 12 days. We're going to get past this. You can either be negative or positive. So this morning I see a lot of media people. Travis Frederick retired. He's a great football player. He's 29. And you can take two views on it. And a lot of the media, snarky and cynical, oh, it's bad for football. Here comes the end. No, 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 no. It is great for football. It is great that great players don't have to go to a third contract. Folks, football is a very safe sport. If the collision window is from 14 to 15 years of age and you retire after a second NFL contract at 29, football is less safe if the collision window is 8 years old, which is stupid. No kid should be hitting at eight. And you have to sign a fourth contract and then stumble the rest of your life. You go from a 30-year window to about a 14-year window. We also have better equipment than ever. Fewer, I mean, good God, they don't hit in college football practice after September. And the new CBA in the NFL, nobody hits anymore at practice. Ooh, another game. Yes, and no hitting at practice. Football, when the collision window shrinks, and it's shrinking because practices are lightening up, equipment's getting safer, and players like Travis Frederick and Calvin Johnson and Doug Baldwin and Andrew Luck and Luke Kuechly and Rob Gronkowski don't have to have a fourth contract or sometimes even a third contract. You know what I mean? This is not an unsafe sport. Football, I mean, I could argue hockey. Hockey, you get all the concussions, all the collisions. It's daunting travel. I know hockey guys who have told me the binge drinking is horrible because of the fighting. Missing teeth's a badge of honor. In the NFL, it's a game a week. No hitting in practice. Increasingly, light workload. Better equipment. Football's always been great at adapting. Baseball's a great sport. It's lousy at adapting. It takes forever to get anything done. Some of that's the strength of the players' union. And in the NFL, you got a weaker player union. So generally, you don't go on strikes. It's a fair deal for owners who don't feel like they're going to give you more of the revenue, and it makes a lot more revenue. But I've never sided with players in strikes. I generally side for an even playing field. 48-49% of the revenue split. Allow players more guaranteed money and good health insurance and get them out of the sport by 29. Travis Frederick leaving now is great news for everybody except Dak. It's great news for football. I don't want Andrew Luck playing if he's in pain. I don't want Calvin Johnson playing if he's hurt. I don't want Luke Kuechly getting another concussion. I don't want to see guys have Hall of Fame speeches and they're, you know what I mean? Honestly, they're hobbling around. They go up to the dais. It's embarrassing. I want guys going up looking like Howie Long and vibrant and dynamic and funny and smart. And that's the imagery we see in football. I love football. It's getting safer. It really is. And go ahead and be negative. Oh, the 17th game. It equipment rule. You can't hit receivers anymore. You can't hit quarterbacks anymore. Remember when you guys were all shouting, wear a dress. And I remember being at ESPN and saying, stop it. Do you love football? Then you want less violent hitting. We want our stars like Tom Brady to be 43, sleeping in kale pajamas, eating vegetable ice cream, and keep playing. Now, offensive line guys, get out of here. Defensive line guys, get out of here. You know, positions, linebackers, retire early. Running backs, get your money, save it, move on. But I look at the Travis Frederick situation, I'm like, love him. He had an illness. He dealt with it. He stepped out. I'd vote him in the Hall of Fame, absolutely. He's a great guy. He's an all-time Cowboy. And he retires now instead of another 4 years and hobbling.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for us. Check out his 2020 draft top 50 players list on @NFL on Fox and FoxSports.com. It's got 7 LSU guys, 6 offensive tackles. Let me start with this, Klatster. Justin Herbert, you have him as the 4th best quarterback behind Burrow, I get, Tua, I get, Jordan Love. Why number 4? What do you see on tape that worries you?
Yeah, good question. And by the way, great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you.
Okay, so let's start with Herbert. So Herbert is an insanely talented, you know, he's a blunt instrument, if you will. He's got a very strong arm. There's no doubt about it. But there are things when you watch his film, and whether it was during the year when I was breaking down his film in preparation for his game against USC, in which he played very well in the final 3 quarters, or now when I go back and watch his film, there are some real red flags to his game. Colin, you can see the talent. He's clearly a big, strong, he's a bright guy. He's a great team player. He's a good quality leader. But when you look at his ability to manipulate his own offense and use his offense to surgically attack the defense in the places where they're weak, he falls short of some of the other guys. And the Jordan Love, love, if you will, above Herbert is just because I think Love has a higher ceiling. I see him with a very similar style of arm talent as Herbert, and yet a much higher ceiling because he makes more NFL style of throws into NFL style of windows in terms of where he's going with the ball and where the structure of the defense tells him to go with the ball. Quick example here, Justin Herbert, his first instincts a lot of the time is to flinch in the pocket and his eyes go down to the rush. That's an alarming trait to see, especially when you see a very experienced player in college football that's taken a lot of snaps and he's still making those what I would call immature mistakes from the quarterback position. So this is a guy that is not very surgical with his game. He's more of a blunt instrument. If you want to succeed in the NFL, I think that you need to become a surgical passer from the quarterback position, whether that's out of the pocket or inside the pocket. That's what wins in the playoffs, and that's why I've got Herbert below those other guys.
Now, I think Tua is going to be a legend, or you're going to be looking for a new GM if you draft him. I think there's a huge – I think his ceiling's really high. I love so much about him, but the injury stuff. If you are a GM like a Miami, do you take him?
Well, I don't think he's getting past that spot, and I think that Detroit probably is starting to, in particular with some of these videos, I'm sure you've seen the video on social media of him working out and, and Tua we're talking about. He looks great. I mean, he really does, and I'm so happy for him that he seems to be as healthy as he is in some of those videos and moving so well, like we expect and want him to move in this time period in particular after that horrific injury to his hip. Now, you bring up a couple of questions. One is his injury status. And we're not just talking about his hip. I'll get into that in just a second. We're also talking about his value and what's happening at the top of the draft. If I'm looking at the top of the draft, Colin, I got to tell you that the most advantageous spot right now seems to be Detroit at three because they have a quarterback in Matthew Stafford, and the guy that they covet is Jeff Okuda, the corner from Ohio State, who they could probably get in the fifth or sixth spot, and that's the spot in which you see those teams that desperately need the quarterback are sitting.
Yeah.
So if you're the Chargers and you really want Tua, guess what you've got to do? You've got to go up ahead of Miami. If you're Miami and you really love Tua, guess what you've got to do? Box out the Chargers from going up and getting him, and the spot becomes three with that Detroit pick. I think Detroit could move down to one of those spots, still get Okuda, who I think is the best corner in the draft, sure up some of that defensive edge that they need to under Matt Patricia. And to me, that's the best, most advantageous spot, at least early in the draft, is that Detroit pick. Now to the injury part that you asked about, that kind of dual-part question. Here's the concerning part for me about Tua. It's not necessarily just his hip, although, yes, that's concerning. It's the fact that, Colin, he's never played a full season healthy, even in college football. He's had the ankle injuries, and all these injuries to me have a very similar pattern, and that is the pattern that Tua believes he is more elusive than he actually is.
Hmm.
Now, is he very good on his feet? Yes. Is he as elusive as Russell Wilson? Not even close, which is why he gets caught, tackled from behind, and gets some of those high ankle sprains and then ultimately that horrific hip fracture that he suffered. They're all very similar in their nature, and they all have a common thread of him being a little less athletic than he thinks he is, which is a problem. And that would persist in the NFL in my mind. So while I think he is a great player, I've got him five on my big board, I think he could be Drew Brees. I think he needs to be more Drew Brees than Russell Wilson because he's not as athletic as he thinks he is. And when he's running around, that's what leads to some of those injuries, which have led to him not finishing a season in college football.
You know, it's interesting. So there's seven LSU guys in your top 50. A lot of offensive tackles. It's a good year for tackles, bad year for center, good year for corners, wide receivers. A lot of SEC guys in your top 50. Let's see here. I see a lot of SEC. You are tough on the SEC, Klatt. I see a lot of SEC guys here. What's up with that?
I'm going to push back and just say I don't believe I'm tough in particular on the top end of the SEC. I like to call it how it is. The top of the SEC is the class in college football. You know, I think Ohio State had a great year. I think Clemson had a great year outside of that conference. And other than that, there really wasn't anybody else on that tier of Alabama and LSU. My argument during the fall has always been, and I think that you would back me up on this if we weren't, like, you know, being sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek, My argument has always been that the middle and bottom of that conference shouldn't get a pass for how bad they are just because they can ride on the coattails of great programs at the top, namely the top three if you include Georgia in there, and even if you wanted to throw Florida and maybe Auburn in there as well. It's a terrific conference at the top. The middle and the bottom of the conference is not as strong as everybody makes it out to be. And those are the fan bases that generally like to scream and shout about SEC and get the chance going. But it's a phenomenal conference. It's proven out in the draft. I see it when I evaluate. That's why I've got all those guys in my top 50.
Yeah, look at all these offensive linemen. Good Lord. You know, what is it about Iowa? How the hell is Iowa? Iowa wins seven games a year, and they've always got four guys in the top 50. They have your favorite offensive tackle, one of the best pass rushers. Just a couple years ago, they had two of the top tight ends. I don't know what it is. Part of me loves Iowa, and part of me wants to punch him in the forehead for scheduling Citadel six times a year. What do you? Why do they put so many guys in the NFL?
I didn't understand that they scheduled the Citadel.
Oh, actually, they've always got a cream puff, ridiculous out of conference schedule. They play directional schools.
I disagree. They always play Iowa State with Matt Campbell.
No, they're good for an hour. Great.
Tough game. They play nine conference games, so that's 10 Power 5 games. And normally they'll play like in Northern Iowa, if you will.
Northern Iowa.
Listen, you want to punch Iowa in the face sometimes. Let me just tell you for a fact, Zach Johnson from PGA Tour can back me up on this. They want to punch you in the face.
Hey, I'll go there anytime, line up, and punch that. All of them right in the forehead. I mean it. I am tired of Iowa, but they do produce really good football players. A lot of them.
Unbelievable.
They really do.
You are unbelievable. I'm here to defend Iowa. I had them in the bowl game. I tell you what, that's a good program.
Oh, no.
That is a very good program.
Well
they
coached.
USC, not that USC is all that strong right now.
Yeah, I just looked at their schedule for next year. They open up with Jiffy Lube, Panera Breads right after that. You're right. Okay, let's move on. When you look at this draft,
okay. Hey, now do your beloved SEC in November. Go ahead. Look at the Citadel in there. Look at Charlotte in there. Go ahead, Colin. Listen, if you're going to call a spade, then call it a spade across the board.
Here's all I know. Every year in the draft, the top 50 players half are from four teams in one conference.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And then if you throw Ohio State in there and Clemson in there, that basically covers it. Then you sprinkle in Iowa and you sprinkle in, you know, places like Penn State and places like that, and then you basically got it.
Yeah, let me one thing here. You're a former quarterback. All quarterbacks, I think, make their receivers, not vice versa. Larry Fitzgerald, best years with his best quarterbacks. Can't you look at LSU is probably the best college football team I've ever seen in terms of they have the best O-line, they have the second best running back in the draft, they have the best one of the best receivers and the best undraftable receiver he's still in college. They have the best undraftable corner. I mean, they're going to have like 12 guys drafted.
Let me interrupt you for just a second because I want to tout Joe Burrow for a moment here.
God.
This might be where you're going with the question. I don't know if it is or not. They've had all that talent for years, so why didn't they win the national championship and put together some of the best years that we've ever seen?
Why
that was
one
of the singular best years that we've ever seen a team have.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the single catalyst was Joe Burrow.
But then why was he so mediocre the year before with all those players?
Got there so late. Remember now, he got there so late. He got there after spring football. He goes through spring football in Columbus. And because remember, Colin, he started at Ohio State first. He goes through spring football in Columbus. Haskins wins the job. Urban Meyer rightly declares Haskins the quarterback at that point. So Burrow is able to go transfer. So he didn't transfer until after spring football. That's 15 full practices. That's a full fall camp. So he missed a full fall camp. Now he gets there. He gets in there a bit late. I think it's understandable that he was average his first season because he didn't have a full offseason to play with that team. Then once you have him as the quarterback, remember he took that huge hit in the Fiesta Bowl against UCF on a pick that I think was ended up being a pick six. He gets rocked. He comes right back, leads them to victory. There's the turning point for your team as a program. That's the catalyst for then moving into the offseason. He's the bona fide leader. He leads spring football. He leads the throwing sessions in the summer. He leads fall camp. And now all of a sudden you have a team that is behind a true leader at the quarterback position. I think it's a far different set of examples or a set of you know, outlying deals that you have in his previous season. I really believe that. And I think if you look at it, and then I've talked to many coaches down there, this was really his offense. I mean, he was so involved in calling and building these offensive game plans and what they wanted to run and how they wanted to run it. Joe Brady got a lot of credit for it, and I understand Joe Brady got a lot of credit for it, but Joe Burrow was the single catalyst of change from a program that was perpetually underachieving with great recruiting classes under a coach that was just an old defensive line coach, and now all of a sudden he's thought of as this great epiphany of a head coach because he had a quarterback that was unbelievable. Joe Burrow was a surgeon. If Herbert was a blunt instrument, Burrow was a surgeon. This game translated. I've said it on your show, and I'll say it before, I'll say it again. Joe Burrow reminds me of Joe Montana. When Joe Montana played the game, he played with a smoothness in his feet and a surgical approach mentally attacking the defense that at that point was beyond reproach. He had no peer at that point in the way that he played. Burrow is similar to that. He's so smooth. The basketball background, the absolute competitive nature that you see when he gets hit and bounces back, the surgical nature in which he sees the weaknesses in the structure of the defense, and then he goes out and attacks them. I love Joe Burrow, man.
Must be nice when you have 9 seconds to throw behind the offensive line of LSU. You're telling me he's Joe
Montana.
What
happened in all those years before?
He couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins. Couldn't beat him out. Couldn't beat out JT Barrett.
Dwayne Haskins threw 50 touchdown passes at Ohio State. You're acting like Dwayne Haskins was chopped liver. He put together the single best Big Ten passing season that we've ever seen.
Couldn't beat out JT Barrett.
Drew Brees.
Couldn't beat out JT Barrett.
You'll have to ask Urban about that one.
JT Barrett, right now, is where is he? He's a scout team guy, I think, somewhere, actually.
Okay, so put a line in the sand. You would take Tua over Joe Burrow.
I think if Tua didn't have a hip in.
Why are you hemming and hawing? If you're going to listen,
all
if
I'm
you're
saying,
talk the talk, walk the walk.
I said Burrow is Tony Romo. You've got him because he shares the same shoe size as Montana as the second greatest quarterback of all time. I think that's a little over the top.
I believe Joe Burrow will have a much better NFL career than Tony Romo, who didn't win a playoff game.
With Cincinnati's ownership in front office in that division.
Well, I didn't say where he was going to play, but I did just share with you how he changed the culture of a perpetually underachieving program with top 10 classes, and he took them to the single greatest season that we may have ever seen a college football team have. Certainly the best single season I've ever seen a quarterback
have. Let's make a bet.
Maybe he's the catalyst for change.
This is the easiest bet. I feel guilty because you have a wonderful family. So what bet are we going to – I'll make you a deal. He does not make the playoffs in his first 5 years. So this will be a long payoff bet. Let's do a short payoff bet. He will be the fourth best quarterback in his division his first year in the NFL. Let's bet something delicious. What do you want to go on?
Dinner.
You name the spot.
Man.
I mean, this is the easiest bet I've ever made. I thought Goulet was a
sucker. I mean, this is a lot of constraints here. Fourth best in his own division?
Yeah. Passer rating, fourth best passer rating own division.
I mean, that has so many other factors rather than his actual game. I would rather
I thought he was Joe Montana.
I would take playoffs in his first 3 years. First 3 years, he's and I'll put $1,000 to any charity.
Joe Montana won the Super Bowl first year.
Well, then take Tua. Take Tua, Colin. If you're going to talk like this, then take Tua. Go out there. Come on. Come on. You got the mic. Toughen up.
No, I'm kidding. All right. I'm done with you, Klatt. go to at NFL on Fox and foxsports.com. The great Joel Klatt. Good talking to you.
My man, have a great day. Hey, by the way, thank you to all the first responders, the nurses, the doctors. You're out there on the front lines. We love you. Thank you. We're thinking about you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I do think teams get better in the draft, no question. But I've always done a show after the draft where I combine – I don't do a post-draft show. The show I do after the draft is, and I've done this for 15 years, I take your free agent signings and your draft picks, and I take the top 4 or 5 picks. Are you a better football team? Because let's be honest, Free agent picks, I know what I'm getting with most NFL free agent picks. I don't know what I'm getting with a draft. Outside of a dozen guys, you have a pretty good sense they can play. So here we go, our best for last. My first herd hierarchy of the NFL season coming up post-free agency.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
I would say Green Bay. They need another receiver in the draft, but they'll probably end up reaching because they have a lower first-round pick and the good guys are gone. But they lost right tackle Brian Bulaga, Blake Martinez, another guy I like, an active linebacker. They lost him. They added a linebacker, Christian Kirksey. But Aaron Rodgers declined last year with a progressive new coach. Right now, I don't see the Packers as being formidable enough to win a Super Bowl. I have them at 10.
Number 9.
Denver is my dark horse team in the NFL. They won 4 of their last 5 games last year. Drew Lock was the starter. I think they found their guy. Bradley Chubb missed 12 games. He comes back. They added Melvin Gordon. Defensive tackle Jarrell Casey. Cornerback A.J. Bouye. I think they're a better football team. They've got momentum. They lost a couple of last-second heartbreakers last year. I think Denver's a playoff team going forward.
Number 8.
Tampa Bay. Listen, they were 7-9 with 35 turnovers at the quarterback position. Bridgewater or Brady, they're going to be better. Excellent defense down the stretch with Todd Bowles. I think one of the smartest defensive coordinators out there. I think Tampa ends up being a wild card team next year.
Number 7.
Pittsburgh Steelers get Big Ben back. They added a tight end I like, Eric Ebron. Don't forget, this is a team that was 8-5 with a quarterback named Duck. And then they lost their last 3 games. They did an unbelievable patchwork job. And the reason they were able to compete, they were first in the NFL in takeaways and sacks. Young defense is talented and getting better. Add Eric Ebron and Big Ben. I got the Steelers at 7.
Number 6.
Seattle Seahawks. Veteran tight end Greg Olsen. They added him. Right tackle Brandon Shell. Quentin Dunbar, a very good corner, picked him up. They could still keep Jadeveon Clowney. I may have Seattle low. If not for cluster injuries at running back, it was just ridiculous. I think they beat Green Bay. So they've added pieces. Russell Wilson's in his prime. I do think they get Jadeveon Clowney figured out. Seattle at 6.
Number 5.
Philadelphia. They need to draft more than one receiver, but they added an excellent corner, Darius Slay. Carson Wentz really came of age late in the season. The reason I don't have them quite as high as their talent, they're going to have to make some moves to get receivers. They may draft 2-3. It's really right now the primary weak spot, and they are talented, but they get a little up there with injuries and age on the offensive line.
Number 4.
New Orleans Saints. I wasn't as high last year, but they proved me wrong. Back-to-back 13-win seasons. They added 2 players I really like. Malcolm Jenkins, super smart, veteran safety, leadership qualities. He's a grown-up. And Emmanuel Sanders, by the way, on our show tomorrow. Emmanuel Sanders, now with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and Drew Brees and Sean Payton. That's just 65 catches and 6 touchdowns. That is a great addition in New Orleans. I have him at 4.
Number 3.
San Francisco does lose DeForest Buckner, the defensive lineman, but they get a first-round pick for it. And they had to pay a couple of their guys, so they need a talented kid they don't have to pay a fortune to. And so far, they've done a pretty good job drafting players. I still think they have, overall, the best defensive line in football. Their receivers are young and getting better, but I think they're going to pick up a great player in the first round at 13. I think they'll keep it rolling. Shanahan, to me, is the best young coach in football. San Francisco, 3.
Number 2.
Kansas City. Not a lot of moves. I love where they're going. Post-Super Bowl, a little hangover, a little party. I think their division's tougher. I think Denver's going to be a lot better. I think the Raiders have improved. I think the Chargers get a quarterback. So Kansas City could be good. But they could lose 2 more games next year just because the division's tougher.
Number 1.
I think Baltimore is scary. First of all, their defense was good last year. They had Calais Campbell, Marlon Humphrey, Michael Brockers. You do not want any part of Baltimore's defensive line. I also think they have the best secondary right now in the NFL, kind of by far. And again, Lamar Jackson, a lot of people think, well, they're going to figure him out. Well, I saw from year one to year two, he made a big jump. My guess is year two to year three, he also makes a jump. Baltimore looks good. Baltimore's defense right now, this is a franchise that's always had really good defenses. If you just go and look, go online and look at Baltimore's defense, it's got like 7 to 8 elite defensive players. So they got their offensive line figured out, the quarterback figured out. They hit it last year at wide receiver in the draft. I think Baltimore right now is the best team in the NFL. Their secondary is filthy. Earl Thomas, Marcus Peters, Humphrey, and Jimmy Smith is back, right? Good Lord. I mean, they're Baltimore's defensive line and secondary. I mean, there's going to be at some point the passer ratings this year throwing the ball against Baltimore may be the lowest. It will be unbelievable. Poor Joe Burrow. That's the best secondary in the NFL in a decade, potentially, and the best defensive front in football outside of the 49ers, and maybe better than the 49ers. Yeah, you're right. Klatt told me Burrow's Joe Montana, so he'd just fly right through it. Hot knife through butter, right? All right.